Welcome to a Bowden Education podcast, where we chat to educational experts about a range of topics and issues in education now. We talk to those who are passionate about what they do and invite them to share their thoughts, successes, and learning with you. I hope they'll inspire you as they always inspire me. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking to Dr. Stephen Berryman. Stephen describes himself as a composer, teacher, and researcher. Stephen's also recently been appointed as the next president of the Chartered College of Teaching, a position that he'll take up in November of this year. In fact, Stephen was one of the first people to gain Chartered Teachers status with the Chartered College and is a founding fellow. Stephen has over 20 years experience in education and teaching and is currently the Director of Arts, Culture and Community at Odyssey Trust for Education. Stephen's also a visiting research fellow at King's College London and Guildhall School of Music and Drama, and a fellow of the Royal Society of Art, as well as being a Freeman of both the Worshipful Company of Musicians and the Worshipful Company of Educators. Stephen's produced and contributed to a wide variety of publications, has been part of expert panels, and can be heard on a range of podcasts and YouTube recordings. In the podcast, we're going to be talking to Stephen about the work and future aspirations of the Chartered College, as well as Stephen's own beliefs and passions around education. Welcome, Stephen.
Oh, thank you, Catherine. That's really kind. And as we said before we started recording, it makes you think, gosh, I've been busy. But I suppose it's because I absolutely love being in education. And that's why you can't help but get involved, I think. And maybe it's starting out as a musician and starting out in the arts. It's the kind of subject where you love collaborating with other people. You love taking part in performances. You love riffing off other people's ideas. So being involved in lots of these things really comes from that, starting out as a musician.
So talk to me then about maybe your career to date. So clearly I've just summarised all the things that you're doing now, and I'm surprised you've even got time to talk to me, to be honest. But how did teaching come about for you?
Well, by accident, and it's probably the same for most people, isn't it? Maybe I didn't start out when I left school. I didn't think I was going to be a teacher. I always wanted to do music. Right from when I was 12, I knew I was going to do music. That was just undeniable. It was unquestioning. And then you go through that period of your parents saying, don't do music because you won't get a job and you won't make any money. And, you know, I got through that. That's fine. So I went to university, studied music. I kept studying at university, a different one. And I thought, I'm going to do a PhD. But my family said, no, get a job, be a grown up. And so they made me apply for a job in a boarding school in Dorset. And I thought, fine, I'll apply. I still want to do my PhD though. So I applied for the job and annoyingly I got it. And I remember vividly handing in my master's dissertation. It must have been at the beginning of September. And as you do, you finish your dissertation at something like 3 a.m. And then my sister arrived at some like 6 a.m. with a van to pack up my room. I'd fallen asleep on the, you know, in my dorm. She had to bang on the door, get packing randomly. Then the next day, I remember I was at an inset day at the school, and that was it. I was a teacher, and so I did all my training on the job. But it was really quite interesting because I felt such a fraud at the beginning that I thought, oh, I don't know how to do this, but someone said to me, which has stuck with me right all these years later, I was moaning to the trombone teacher saying, I really don't know what I'm doing here, this is really hard. And he said, don't forget that you were taught. And it is really quite powerful because all of us have been to school. Mm. And all of us have spent a huge amount of our time in education. So we've seen great teachers, and it makes you think about all the great teachers you've had. And I think after that, so for me, thinking about all the great teachers I've had and working in that boarding school, it was about 5 years, high needs in that school. I think something like 65% of students had a special educational need. And it was a fairly small school, but as a first school, it was brilliant because I had to learn how to teach individuals and really embrace the idiosyncrasies, the quirks, the needs of children, and just seeing them flourish when you get that support right and you provide them with a real rich diet, a great curriculum, great experiences beyond the classroom. And then my second job, I moved to London, the absolute opposite end of the spectrum, highly selective, top of the league table, girls' independent school, North London Collegiate School. And I was there for about 6 years, and it was really strange at the beginning because you would ask a question in the class and every hand would go up. every hand would go up because they were so keen to learn. And it was not that they weren't keen to learn in my last school, but it was very different. Everyone was an individual. So suddenly being in a highly selective school where every child was getting the highest grades and everything, every child wanted to learn, it was very different. But I really took with me from that first job, really embracing the idiosyncrasies and quirks of young people and making sure I didn't lose that, that teaching was always about teaching the people in front of you, because we can get used to planning curriculums and lessons for imaginary pupils. Mm-hmm. And I think what I learned was I need to really know the pupils I have and plan for them. And it makes teaching much more agile and interesting, because every year you've got different kids. Yeah. You never have the same children each year. So it means you constantly need to be reflective and think about how I'm going to change and make this right for the pupils in front of me. Mm-hmm. So 6 years in Auckland Collegiate School, really inspiring, obviously academic to the max. So lots of engagements with universities and partnerships. So I really flourished there. And then I really taught full time before I became a HOD for about 11 years. So it's quite weird being a full time classroom teacher, 11 years. Then I got my first HOD role in another school, another selective girls school. And that, again, very different school. Same kind, you think it would be the same. Mm. Again, highly selective, high achieving, but again, completely different. And it really made me think about place plays such a huge part in the type of way a school works. And the location tells you everything, and the kind of opportunities it provides, and the demographic. So that was really inspiring again, because that was just had a very different ethos. And then I was also teaching at a specialist music setting, Royal Academy. So it's very busy. But eventually, after 17 years of Saturdays, I thought I can't work on Saturdays anymore. So I stopped Saturday teaching. But then eventually, during the pandemic, actually, early 2020, this job came up in a multi-academy trust. And I was just working across the City of London in a strategic role across our family of schools. So I still had my HOD role. I was seconded part of a week to lead cultural learning across our group of schools. But then this job came up in the MAT sector, and I thought, gosh, this is a bit scary. I've never worked in this sector. But it felt right. I felt, you know, the pandemic makes you rethink a lot of what you value, what's important. And I felt I've spent so much of my career now in specialist, well, highly selective education. I'm going to go work in a very different setting. I'm going to go and see if I can make change happen for young people that really need the arts. And so I took on this job as Director of Arts and Culture, and after a year it became Director of Arts, Culture and Community, because it became quickly apparent to me in Bexley that there's a need to engage with the community. If we're going to make this education successful for 3,200 pupils across our two schools, we're going to have to make sure we embrace what our community brings and make sure our school community is welcome in the broader community. So and then so accompanying all of that throughout the last 5-6 years, I've just slowly engaged more with university and initial teacher training. So just contributing a bit to subject leading music at one place and some contributions to master's teaching at King's. And just, I love, as I said at the beginning, really, being a musician, you just love connecting with other people, love the dialogue, love the conversations. And being part of, you know, I've taught right from primary right up to doctoral students. It's just, I think teaching is teaching. Regardless of whoever you're teaching, but yeah. I think just being able to contribute and just to be able to learn from people across all of this makes my job that much more richer. And it's that collegiality which has permeated my entire career to date.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you, because I've taught across sectors and across phases, and actually it boils down to what you teach, what do you teach? And that's a question that comes up. And, you know, quite often the answer is sort of secondary music. Well, actually, no, you teach young people, you teach children. And it doesn't matter whether you're teaching and working with young primary children or master's students, it's still about the learning process.
Yeah.
And thinking about those people, what do they need? Where have they come from? Where do they want to go? How to challenge them? How to excite them about learning? So yeah, I think it's fantastic to do that. So tell you've had a varied career. You're involved in so much, which must take up your whole life pretty much. But what really then inspires you to carry on? Because education's tough, and you say you love working in education, but we hear so many headlines, don't we, but just how difficult it is.
It is really, and it's interesting, because I know we said before we pressed the record button that we're talking about workload, and I know we'll probably chat about that later, but I think about all my family were involved in very different professions, and you know that every job is hard, and you think to yourself, actually, we care so much in education, we care so deeply about pupils being successful, that it means we give so much more than the kind of the shop hours, so to speak, need of us. And we work into the evening, we work for the weekend because we want it to be good. We want them to be successful. We want them to pass their exams. We want them to, you know, embrace certain opportunities. And that means we have to work a lot because we care about it. And I suppose there's that fine line, isn't there, about keeping yourself well and healthy and recognising, actually, I'm doing too much here. And I suppose it gets to a stage where you're doing so much, it prevents you from giving your best. But there is a balance to strike. But I think it compels me to keep being in education because I suppose it is so varied. Mm. You can keep growing through it. You can always get better. The journey is never finished. I will never be my best teacher. Mm. And that's sad. I thought I'll never be the best person I could be because I know I'll keep getting better, hopefully. I'm always going to be challenged and inspired by someone. So it propels me to keep doing it because I know that I will never get to the stage where this is boring because I'll never be working with the same young people and I'll never be working with the same teachers. Well, with the retention rate things.
Definitely.
I think that's what spurs me on. There is no day that is the same.
No, and as well, the challenges change, the curriculum changes, what you want to teach about should change, we hope. So you're never an end product. It doesn't matter where you are teaching, you're always learning. And yeah. I think, like you say, some people say, I just can't engage with anymore. I just need to go home. I'm so tired. But sometimes I feel that having professional dialogue, listening to a podcast, actually, it doesn't matter how tired you are, it can reinvigorate you.
Yeah, it's so a real rejuvenation.
It's the connections that are important. And I don't know about you, but certainly if anyone's listening, feeling that they're kind of in that burnt-out phase and they're so overwhelmed with their workloads, step back, but then re-engage and think about who you're connecting with as well. And do they bring positivity and energy, or are you sitting in the moaning corner of the staff room that is just sapping your energy? You know, it's not just connecting, it's connecting with the right people, I think.
Yeah, and I think head teachers, I shouldn't single them out, but you know, school leaders have such a massive role to play in creating that culture. Mm. And actually, every workplace is going to have people that need a good whinge, and you need to give the space for people to share that. Mm. But also, you need to have a real, I suppose, empathy to challenges and be able to kind enough to deal with them. But I think for me, I've kept in education because I've had head teachers that have been really sympathetic to what, you know, where I could go and what I could do next. Mm. And have nudged me to try things or nudged me to contribute. And I think that's really important as a leader, that you keep encouraging people to grow. And it's just like students, isn't it? Teachers need to feel that someone's recognised, oh, you'd be really good at that. Do you want to join me with that group? You might be really good at leading that. Maybe I should know. So you should apply for that thing. Have a go. And having someone who's really interested in your progression, because I think we become teachers because, again, we love learning, don't we? Mm. And we want to keep learning. So I think we need to make sure we treat our staff like our pupils, really. Keep challenging them. Keep inspiring them to progress and keep loving the job.
Yeah, absolutely. So moving on then to most recently, and congratulations on becoming president-elect of the Chartered College. Why do you then, obviously, you value the work of the Chartered College. Why is it so important that organisation now to the profession, in your opinion?
I think it's a really interesting question because I guess we have so many professions that have some type of body that represents its interests. You know, we've got the Chartered Surveyors or Royal Chartered Geographical Society. Mm. And I think it's obviously a very, you know, aged tradition, isn't it, to have a professional body that preserves the best of a profession. I suppose the City Livery Companies are the most good example of that. You know, we've got some that are over 500 years old, really. You know, Worshipful Company of Musicians is over 500 years old. And traditionally, these professional bodies would allow you to practice your profession within the walls of a city and things like that, and vote for the Lord Mayor. But I think there's that, again, as I mentioned the word before, collegiality is really important, that we need to galvanise a collective voice around the profession, particularly when our profession might have big issues or big debates, particularly at a policy level. So if you've got someone who's canvassing for change, if that's going to have an impact on your profession as a whole, you need that representative body to stand up for you. And whilst we do have unions that do that for certain things, unions tackle kind of working life in a different way. A professional body really, I suppose, extols the best practices for a way a profession works. Yeah. These are the best practices of teaching. This is why we have a charter college. It's all very much research informed. They show what the best evidence informed work can be for our profession, because we know that, I suppose, children are, their childhood's vital. We need to get it right. We only get one chance. So teaching needs that professional body to really stand up for the best, to represent the profession's interests at a policy level when things might have an impact on the way we might deliver the curriculum, but also to provide that structured approach for people to progress and stay in the profession. So that's why programmes such as chartered teacher status are so important, that people can become chartered as a teacher, demonstrate their expertise in the classroom, grow beyond their initial teacher training, but also demonstrate that commitment to the classroom, because we know teaching very much was about moving into management, wasn't it? It's about your career, is about reducing your teaching, while charter teacher status really keeps those people in the classroom, but gives them the space to grow and be recognised. So I think there really is a place for a professional body for teaching, because we're a very, it could easily be a fractured profession. There's so many of us. I think there's probably nearly 500,000 teachers, aren't there? And I think we need that singular voice to show what the best of what we can do.
Yeah, and I think for teachers and for those who aren't members, and we'll talk about membership and you can do a bit of a sales pitch as to why, it does give you, it makes you feel part of something, that you are being represented. And we've talked of unions, and we did have it, you'll remember, we were gifted anyway by the DfE at some point, the General Teaching Council. I can remember getting the letter, you must pay. And then it was taken away, which I always just find mind-blowing, actually, because really a professional body should be run exactly as it is now, and separate to any political interference, really. Of course, work with the political side of education. We need to work with them. Then we need to work with our politicians to help them understand what education is really like. Previously, and it that wasn't the serving role of that body, and then we were without. So it was very timely, I feel, and very much needed. That a sense of belonging is important, and I would really, and you can explain why later, but I really would urge people to take a look and think about, do they belong? Do they want to belong? And it starts right from when you make that decision that you want to become a teacher and embark on your teacher education. So on that, you're a founding fellow, as am I actually, of the Charter College. What do you think it's achieved so far?
I mean, it's amazingly young, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're only 5 years old, but to have over 45,000 members, it's quite a rapid growth. But I know there's still more work to do to make sure that the professional body really is representative of the profession. So you would implore, I certainly would implore people to join. And I suppose we want to normalise membership, that I'm a teacher, I'm part of my professional body, because I want to be part of that bigger conversation. I want to be recognised for my work, because you want there to be real pride in being a teacher. And I think that's what the Charter College is trying to do, really, is to make sure that we recognise that this is a really valuable and important profession. But through those 45,000 members, over 3 million students are reached through those members. So all those members are teaching over 3 million students. But we've had over 4 million views of research, resources, webinars on the platform. And 95% of those members are teaching and working in schools. So it really is an organisation that is representative of those very much active in the classroom. And it's contributed widely to policy conversations and some research work. It did education in times of crisis reports. It's been a real positive voice for the profession, you know, highlighting the importance of teaching and how that's been effective. So Dame Alison's been very vocal during the pandemic to make sure people realise that teachers are working incredibly hard. I mean, particularly during the pandemic, when all of us had to rapidly pivot to digital. You know, all those days of travelling up to cold and windy Lancaster are over now. We can just lift our laptops up. But we were expected to do that overnight. You know, schools are closing. Now we go to online learning. And it's just, you know, incredible that we did that. But there's over 360 chartered teachers now. And to think with the pandemic, that hasn't really impacted teacher development. There's still a keenness for teachers to grow. Over 260 people passed the certificate in evidence-informed practice. And that's another module they offer, which is a part of the journey towards charter teacher status, with over 1,000 currently working towards a certificate. They moved their charter teacher status to a more flexible route. It used to be a single, when I was on the pilot, it would just be one 18-month journey, but now it's flexible. So that's great to work around your life. You could do it over 3 years in a variety of ways. We've got 39 learning partners who are delivering CPD accredited by the Chartered College, but it really has positioned itself as the voice of a profession. It's, as you said previously, it's an apolitical voice, really keen to gather member insights and evidence, and all of those member insights and evidence are fed into their policy work and their connections with other organisations. But the impact's been big, and many chartered teachers have said, and I suppose I'm one of them, that it's had such a visceral impact on my work. And I think I wouldn't have been brave enough to just pivot to a very different job, very different sector, if I didn't have the strength of that training behind me, and I suppose that collegiality of the Charter College. But yeah, it's been very busy.
Yes. Yeah. And I think to begin with, obviously it was financially supported by the government. And I think I certainly saw, right, the change from when it started off. It was quite quiet and unassuming, and perhaps, should we say, a little bit polite. When it became financially independent, which was so important in my mind, so important to get to that point. And I think, yeah, Dame Alison did a fantastic job and was very visible across the pandemic when people needed someone to stand up for them, maybe, and they felt that they were struggling themselves, or, you know, having that, you know, schools are closed, but we're still teaching debate. So I think that moment of their financial independence was really pivotal to enable them to do what the vision probably always was, but they were a little bit constrained because of where their money was coming from. So how do you feel, though? Because you've talked and you've hinted a little bit, and we've dropped in a little bit about some of the challenges of the profession. And the profession is facing massive challenges still. And these are things that seem particularly stubborn. We've been talking and worrying about teacher retention for many years now, about the recruitment into the profession, which goes up in spikes. So during the pandemic, people did do their PGCEs because they couldn't get a job, but it's now fallen off again. And we always see that recession, applications go up when the economy is looking a little bit better, or there are jobs available. It peaks. So it's got these real stubborn issues, and workload and wellbeing is the other that is particularly stubborn. How do you feel about those kind of issues, and what's your perspective on them?
I suppose it's when we've been in profession for so long, it's interesting to see how it's changed. And thinking about when it started, for me, when I started teaching, and that I wasn't observed, you didn't get observations, so none of that. No one needed to see my planning. No one needed to see my mark book. There was a sense of real trust. You wanted to do a good job. And I'm sure the people who didn't do a good job, I, you know, was determined to do so. But I felt very trusted. I was given the space and time to grow and learn. And I was very, you know, if I needed to go on training, that was resourced and supported. I had the time to do it. You know, I'd go off for 2 or 3 day courses to, you know, do things that would enhance my practice. So there was a real joy for it. And I suppose as you go through and you reflect on, you know, as you progress through your schools and you see what's happening, you see, oh, wait, that's a bit squeezed. I've not, you know, I can't go on a course anymore. Oh, there's no money for that. So, and maybe resources are a bit tight. You know, equipment doesn't work. I can't go on training. Suddenly I need to be observed more often. Oh, I've got to fill in an appraisal form. Oh, I've got to do. And you can see how gradually there has just been an increase of, I suppose, accountability measures from lots of things. And I guess, you know, I feel really strongly that education deserves to be held to account, because this is a child's life. So, you know, we do deserve to have some kind of accountability, and we need people to make sure we're doing the best for children. But it's an interesting balance, isn't it, when you can't be your best self. So when accountability or any kind of systems and processes encroach on the way you can do your best job, that's when you're going to feel that, wait, I'm not enjoying this. Mm-hmm. And that's when those feelings of burnout are going to start to creep in, because you can't, wait, I haven't finished it. Oh, wait, something else has come in. Oh, wait, I've got to do those reports. Oh, no, it's a parent scene tonight. Wait, that. And it starts to feel a kind of a sense of overwhelm, because too much is going on. And I feel for teachers, I guess, probably compared to any other job, and I shouldn't say this because there's loads of jobs like this, I guess, but you're not really in control of what you do. You get given your timetable, and you might not get it till July or even September, And that's your life. You're told, like, this is how you're going to spend your days. You had no say.
Here's the curriculum.
Yeah. You're just, you know, you're teaching full time. You're told you're going to be here that time. So you have no control. And I know there's loads of jobs like that. So it's not unique, but it is a very strange feeling, isn't it? Like, I can't decide when I'm going to see year nine. Like, it's going to be Friday afternoon at the end of it. Like, I haven't got, it's just how it is. And so there is a weird disempowerment about teaching. And I guess as you gradually climb up, you know, leadership ladders, you get a bit more say. But there's always someone above you, isn't there, who dictates how you're going to work. And I think because there's that pressure that's coming from someone and somewhere, that everyone is feeling that need to do something that ultimately has an impact on someone else. And so I think gradually seeping through all the layers of life in schools, someone's being held to account, which is increasing accountability for the next person in the chain and the next person in the chain. And gradually, you know, there's a real risk that feeling of joy, the reason why we all went into education, because we believe we can make a difference to a child, gets eroded because we're losing that control and ability to pace ourselves. So I think, yeah, well-being and retention is really hard, because I imagine there'll be teachers feeling, this is not what I signed up for. This is not the kind of working life I wanted to have. I can't keep on top of this. I can't get everything done in the time I've got. And, you know, I think some people thrive in those environments, don't we? So we know that there are people who still in teaching who, you know, thrive in that, but it's not right for everyone. But I don't know I'm not quite sure what the answer is.
Yeah, I'm not sure that there is an easy answer though, Stephen, because I think surely if it was an easy answer, we'd have solved this problem. But I agree. I think there are some people that, you know, their perfect school would be, here's a scheme, teach that week by week, exactly like that. Others feel hugely compromised by that. And there are tensions around their values around education and what education has become. And if you put all the layers on, the school's culture that maybe rubs up against that, now you can do something about that as a teacher, you can go to a different school. But then you've got the Ofsted accountability. And again, I think it's about taking time to work our way through this. What does that actually, does it mean? And what have we interpreted it to mean? And I think that's very different. I think there's been a lot of misinterpretation of some of these accountability measures, you know, book scrutinies and things like that. Actually, let's stop and pause and take a breath.
I completely agree. And I guess it's probably a bit of an industry that's developed around supporting people through accountability processes and consultants that might help people, you know, get through certain things. But I think we've just, I suppose there's an important conversation to have around what is it, and this is on a school level really, isn't it? What is it for my staff to flourish? Mm-hmm. What is it for my staff to be their best selves? Because when you're your best self, you'll have the best teaching and the students will flourish. Mm-hmm. And I think we've got to spend a bit more time. And I talk about sludge. There's a great article about sludge audits. When you really think about what are the things in our workplace that kind of add friction to our lives, that don't add any value to what we're doing, but actually make it harder for people. And then thinking about administrative processes, you know, if a staff member wants to run a trip, they get really enthusiastic, I'd love to take the kids out to see this history thing. Okay, so you've got to fill that form in, have you checked with so-and-so, you need to go and see so-and-so for permission, then you have to go and do this, you should fill that in, you need to email this person, have you done it? And it's going to make someone feel like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to bother. Sludge adds no value. So I think we've got to think, you know, if we're going to improve well-being at a school level, we need to think really deeply about our sludge and our frictions and our working lives. Because I think, as we've said, some accountability meshes, and I guess actually, you know, kids' safety is important. So we have all these systems in place for a reason, but we just need to think, is this genuinely adding value to our workplace, or is this making it difficult for our workplace to function? And is this making it difficult for our teachers to be their best selves? So I think everyone should do a sludge audit of their schools and think, what could we get rid of? What if we stopped doing would not change our lives, but would make it better for teachers? And I think that's another reason why a professional body is so important, because that's a kind of conversation they can have at scale.
Yes. And endorse and support. I love that. I've written down the sludge. I love that idea. I don't love the sludge. I love the idea of getting rid of the sludge. But also there's that, and I'll move on in a moment, but because I want to know what your aspirations are. But there is also, though, you will find in some schools and in some multi-academy trusts, leadership who want to weigh the pig but not feed the pig.
Yeah.
And I think we can do too much measuring and looking at numbers and looking at books. but there becomes a disconnect then between actually what we're doing in the classroom. So with all of these issues and challenges, what are your aspirations then for your role as president?
Yeah, it's only 2 years long. So anyway, and when I did the Schools Week interview, it's interesting, I guess they asked about that. And I felt for me, a professional body, we need to normalise membership as if I'm a teacher, I'm a member of my professional body because I want to contribute to my profession. I want to feel real pride in it. So a real priority for me is making sure that the membership continues to grow, because we need to make sure it is genuinely representative of our profession. And to do that, we need people to feel they can contribute, be heard. And so we need more people to join. That's really key. And I suppose it'd be fantastic for the Charter College to achieve a Royal Charter. So it could be the Royal Charter College teaching, because it deserves that recognition. And I know there might be tensions with such words these days. I know we've got some, you know, difficult conversations and important conversations around these royal things that continue to go. But I think the profession deserves to be recognised on a par with medicine, accountancy, legal professions, because teaching is vital to society. No other profession exists without teaching. Every child will experience a teacher, well, we hope. So it's important it has the recognition and the status that gives people real pride in being a teacher, but also makes people think, I want to be a teacher. We want young people to say, do you know what, I would love to be a teacher. But also such pride and support that makes people want to stay in it, because we know that's a challenge. We want people to spend their life as a teacher. You want to retire and say, I'm a teacher, even when you've left the classroom.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Great ambitions, I think. So then you want to get your membership up. So go on, pitch it to us. Why should all teachers out there, right from, and I really stress this, right from student teachers, and I do call them student teachers rather than trainees, because I believe I trained my dog quite successfully in a day.
Well, yeah, that's a good distinction.
And I like to educate teachers, but so many aren't, and it's free.
It is for anyone training.
Yeah.
Anyone educated, anyone who's a student teacher.
Yeah. In fact, every student teacher should be a member.
Yeah, everyone. I mean, again, it's normalising that, be part of your professional body.
Part of their induction and their enrolment process at university, it should be kind of, you know, if you're thinking of it like a little factory line, you go along and you show your ID card and you give your picture in and then you do this. So we'll advocate for that. But why should all teachers go online later and become a member?
Well, yeah, charter.college is the website, so easy to remember. But I think if you're not a member, I guess the key thing for me is that, I suppose, one benefit which I particularly like is the Impact magazine. And I know obviously we are awash with things these days to read, but the real joy of Impact magazine is a peer-reviewed journal, in the spirit of, you know, typical academic literature, but it's a brilliant synthesis of teachers in the classroom with those academics who contribute to education in different ways. So we've got some fantastic authors, and there's always a theme for the issues. There's usually three or four, I think it's three a year. We've had some special issues though, so there might be a theme. There's been, you know, educational technology, curriculum, assessment. There's been one on the arts, fantastically. But that's a membership perk. So for only £45 a year, you're getting pretty much termly magazine of really inspiring articles written by people like you in the classroom, reflecting on their practice, but also aligning that practice with the academic realm, looking at what research tells us, but also, you know, testing out ways of working and reflecting on, you know, challenges in their settings. As a member, you get access to a fantastic online platform. So as well as obviously the professional learning, I mentioned the Chartered Teacher Status Certificate in Educational Research, but also you get access to My College, which has loads of videos and other content, which can just, I suppose, support that busy, curious teacher who might want to go learn. Oh, maybe, you know, I've got this problem with assessment. Maybe I'll go and see what's on My College. There might be some interesting videos about practice from colleagues who've had similar issues. But there's a range of events and webinars which enable you to connect with colleagues around particular themes. So it's a great way to just build that collegiality, because I think there's such strength in connecting with those perhaps in similar roles from other settings, but also just colleagues from very different contexts. It just helps to give that counterpoint to your thinking. But also they've released some really inspiring and insightful, as I said, you know, earlier, kind of policy research documents. So really grappling with big issues such as professional development of teachers, such as teaching during the pandemic. And through these kind of research documents, it helps to give some real strength to the profession. Look what we achieved during these difficult periods, but also some inspiration and some next steps for those leaders and teachers who are looking for support to address some of these issues. So I think you get quite a good deal for £45 a year. And I know certainly for me, as being a member, and I'm sure you felt this too, that you really feel like the college looks out for opportunities to make the best of its membership. So there's been chance to contribute to roundtables. There's been chance to attend events and meet people you thought you'd never meet, who might be educational celebrities or, you know, key policymakers. So the Charter Colleges is really great, you know, for me and many members I know. It just giving us that opportunity to contribute and feel valued and feel recognised.
And it's a great opportunity as well for those teachers. You know, you talked about the Impact magazine, and mine came through just the other day, actually, the most recent one, and it sat on my desk there. But encouraging teachers to also contribute to things like that, be it, you know, of course it's nerve-wracking to put your views on down in black and white. It's really, yeah, really awful. But even if it's a blog or something like this, find those spaces where you can contribute as well to the conversation. And that's what it is. It's about being part of the conversation, to me. If you have to be in these networks to be part of the conversation.
Completely agree. And I think that's one of the outcomes of those people who've done the Charter Teacher Programme, is that there is so much reflective writing involved in the program, but I think many of them have gone on to create podcasts, to launch their own networks, to get blogging in a more sustained way, because you have that bravery to share, and that bravery, as you say, to contribute to that conversation. And I think it makes our profession that much more richer when we're able to share insights from what we're doing in the classroom, because it strengthens our case with policymakers the more they understand the reality of our work, and the more we can share that in persuasive and coherent ways. And so I think the college becomes that important conduit for bringing together member views and being able to share them with those that can make a difference to what happens in our schools.
And to finish off, as our time sort of coming to an end, could you share with us now, back to you, Stephen, in your personal career, one highlight that you would say, if you could pick one, if you've got a standout moment?
Gosh, just one. That's really hard. I think for me, going back to, you know, being a music teacher, I'm not teaching music as much now in my current job, but when I first moved to the City of London and I had the chance to put together a concert across 13 schools, it's quite nerve-wracking. And obviously, typical, you know, or any kind of event, isn't it? You never know if it's going to work. But I think that moment when all 13, we didn't have every student from the 13 schools, but when all the 13 schools, the kind of students who were involved, got together and sang a song together, there's such absolute joy seeing young people all meeting on the same terms. We can all sing together. We're all different. We all live in different places. We go to different schools with very different lives, but we can have real collegiality and do something together. And that's why I love the arts. Because it's one subject that can unite people, however different we might be. So I think the highlight for me was that first concert. We went on to do five more, and I was sad to leave the city, actually, because it was just to see every child to be successful on stage is the reason why I keep being in education. Because when you can help someone be successful, and you know what happens with that success, it propels them to can have a great life. It's just an infectious bug that you want to keep going, a bit like COVID.
Which we don't want to keep going, but
yeah, we can get rid of COVID. But I mean, that joy for seeing young people flourish is, yeah, that first City Schools concert is going to live in my memory for the rest of my career.
And then lastly then, is there something that you would still like to achieve in your career that you haven't done yet?
Probably too many things. And I guess actually the older we get, most of them are about keeping yourself healthy and well, aren't they?
Because, yeah.
Bits of your body need a bit more attention. But I think, I suppose I just want to keep contributing as much as I can. And I hope I, you know, if there's a way that I can help people grow or flourish or advocate for someone. So, I mean, it's a real, I'm, you know, thrilled to be able to be president of a charter college, albeit for 2 years. But I suppose I hope I can keep contributing. You know, I suppose it'd be good to contribute more in the university sector when I get a bit older, maybe, because I love working with beginning teachers and I love working with more experienced colleagues who perhaps, you know, working on my doctorates and probably write a book. I suppose we all want to write books, don't we? I'm sure there'll be a book
before
in
we start. Yeah.
But I just keep going. If I can keep doing this until my last days, I'll be happy.
Brilliant. It's been an absolute joy speaking to you, Stephen. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And remember to join the Charter College or even to just have a nosy around. It's chartered.college. And if you want to find out more around Stephen's own work, you can go to his website at www.stephen-berryman.com, but also follow Stephen on Twitter at Stephen_Berryman. Thank you so much, Stephen.
Pleasure. Thanks a lot.